Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamma. Today is Tuesday, July 18th, 2017. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having us. It's I know it's Tuesday, but it's the beginning of a new week or something.
It's the beginning of a new something for someone somewhere. John Martellaro, how are you?
I'd be a wee bit happy to be here. Happy person.
I just love your nondescript accent of happiness. Absolutely love it. I also love that Eero is our sponsor today, and they make the Wi-Fi mesh network system that I'm using in my place, and I am so happy with it. We'll talk about that soon. But first, we need to talk about the government wanting to push technology companies into giving or getting backdoors into our encrypted data, and you'd think that I'm referring to the United States, but this time I'm not. This is Australia, and here's where I want to go with this. So Australia, their Attorney General is pushing for legislation that would force technology companies to put backdoors into their encrypted products so that government agencies could access the information as part of their criminal and terrorist investigations. And this week, the Attorney General is meeting with representatives from Apple to explain to them why they should voluntarily put backdoors into the products, as opposed to waiting for legislation that mandates they do this. Where I want to go with this is, why are the governments thinking that they've got this nailed down and that this is going to be a good idea?
I can answer that.
Oh, please, John. Please.
I've been thinking about this for a while, not just with the recent news about Australia's Attorney General. We tend to pawn it off in 10 seconds as stupidity, which is the same thinking process that they use.
Wait, I don't pawn it off.
Quick draw approach.
I don't, I'm not. Don't saddle me with that.
Well, let me get my thesis out here, and then you can weigh in. I think all of us have 20 or 30 years experience in this business, and we understand the technology, and we have a sort of a knowledge matrix, so to speak. And when we get new information, we mash it against that knowledge matrix and come to new conclusions based on a wealth of experience and information, so that the new information fits logically into the matrix that we've developed over 20 or 30 years in technology. When a government official is exposed to these concepts, and they're exposed to many urgent decisions every day, they don't have that expansive 20 or 30 year history of experience. And so they do what the famous Nobel Prize winning psychiatrist Danny Kahneman talks about. He's not with us anymore. The quick draw, instant decision approach, which our species was designed for survival. And so there is this inability to absorb and integrate into a decision matrix. And so there is nothing but first order or zeroth order ability to come to a conclusion. And to give you an example of this, it's kind of abstract. Let me give you a technical example that I dreamed up this morning.
Okay.
You know, it's easy to understand it better if you put it in terms of something you don't understand at all, like government monetary policy or aeronautics. You know, somebody came to you and said, we need to design our stealth aircraft to deal with long wavelength radars. And you'd go, okay, cool, let's do that. But then you get into the physics and the wavelengths and how thick the material has to be and the weight disadvantage. And the aeronautical engineers will tell you that to design the aircraft to deal with long wavelength radars would add thousands of pounds of weight to the plane. And it's easier to just use computer analysis, AI, and mapping to avoid those radars as opposed to trying to be low visibility in those rare cases where those radars exist. So there's a deep understanding, and people who've been doing something like for 20 or 30 years say, no, we design for short wavelength radars and we're done with it. And there's a wealth of understanding there. So our first reaction in many cases that we're unfamiliar with is the first impulse logical approach. And it's often wrong, as Dr. Kahneman has pointed out over and over again in his books and his research. It requires deep thinking, long thought, counsel, talking to informed people, like the Attorney General of Australia is talking to Apple, and also support from peers. You know, if all your peers are going one way in law enforcement, and you don't have any technical peers, or you don't have a consulting senior scientist who can sit down quietly with you and have a cup of coffee and tell you what's really going on, you're going to go with the flow of your peers and law enforcement environment around you in the government. So these are some of the reasons why I think these government leaders come to the conclusion they do. It's not just because they're being contrarian or they want to damage people's privacy and security. It's the only conclusion they can come to within the matrix and the environment that they have. That's my theory. Brian?
I think it's even more direct than that. I think there is a mindset that starts with, of course, law enforcement should have legal access to communications. Of course they should. I mean, you've got to be able to solve crimes. You can't let criminals just, speak in complete.
Yeah, that's part of privacy. That's part of the incomplete decision matrix.
Yeah,
and a piece of it.
And it is a focus. Like, so you look at someone like James Comey, the now former FBI director, and his focus is stopping crime or solving crimes, and both, solving and I guess preventing to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And when you're tasked with the responsibility to keep people safe, you want to do everything you can to do so. And that becomes this overwhelming priority for you. And then on the political side, the politicians who weren't in say intelligence, actually in the U.S. at the very least, the intelligence community largely agrees that the benefits of a protected United States outweigh the benefits of law enforcement being able to access encrypted communications. If you're someone who's in politics and your focus is law and order, and I hate using that coded term, but you also, it's just so obvious to you that criminals should not have a freely available safe haven. It's just obvious.
So let me see if I've got the logic train that you think they might be on here. Law enforcement sees that they need to solve crimes. Technology companies have created strong encryption, which keeps information away from law enforcement.
Law enforcement with legal warrants for that information.
Right. Yeah. You broke my train here.
Oh, sorry. Hold
on. That's okay. Let me start back at the beginning. I'll get back on track with it. Law enforcement needs to solve crimes. Technology companies have found ways to strongly encrypt data, which means law enforcement can't see that data. In some cases, law enforcement feels they need to access that data. Therefore, companies should just simply make a way for them to have it.
Yeah, the end. The end. This is completely obvious to them. And they, to John's point, they don't understand the repercussions of it. And they don't understand that a backdoor open to one is available to all. And that's where they're going wrong. That's the missing information that they have. It all goes back to the Constitution, Brian.
You know, there are limits placed on government power in the Constitution. what is it? The prohibition against illegal search and seizure. The military people in the late 1700s were just moving into people's homes, or if they thought there was a crime committed, they would just barge into the home and ransack through people's papers, looking through evidence. There was this thought process on the part of the founding fathers that, yes, we will place limits. The people will place limits on the powers of the government for the safety, security, and civility of civilization. So when you have that kind of mentality, then you say, okay, we have to draw the line. But as you mentioned, Brian, there is this current feeling that there is no line, that the government has perfect authority to do whatever.
Well, hold on, though. Hold on, John. But I think you're precisely wrong here. The thing that, yes, there is certainly an element of law enforcement or intelligence who wants to mastervail everything. And that is one topic. The topic we're having here is about when government has the legal warrant to get information and they can't. So they have the legal authority to get it, but
the government is all about the business of granting itself the authority to grant itself power.
Well, no, you're making a constitutional argument when, in fact, they have the constitutional right to the data that they want to get at. The problem is that technology thwarts their constitutional right to get to that data.
Well, I also think the government might view the electronics manufacturers as a little bit suspect and self-serving, too. I mean, I think there's a little bit of elements is that if you really were, you know, with us and part of our thinking, you would cooperate with us. And what you're really doing is you're just doing this to make a lot of money. I think there's some suspicion about that. That's the quick draw thinking.
I agree with that.
I agree. And I think that's a very flawed logic
train
for them to be on. By the way, Brian, your train sounds when I was trying to get back on track. That was awesome. Thank you. I think that if that was a sound logical argument, then there should be laws that require some sort of technology in concrete so that if someone takes evidence of a crime, puts it into a safe, welds a safe shut, encases the safe in concrete, and then throws it into the ocean, that concrete manufacturers could do something that would cause the safe to float back to the top of the water so it could be recovered.
I would like to add here, this is super important to me, I'm not buying into the arguments that I'm making. I'm simply trying to understand how it is that these folks think this way. They're sure dead wrong. We have to be protected. We have to do what the brainiacs who have been in charge of our national security have understood for quite a while now. We must be protected from all of the other actors that are out there, from criminal and foreign agents who want to compromise our data.
Yeah, and the trick is how to find effective ways to do that as technology changes. And that's something that law enforcement has been dealing with for a very long time. It predates silicon chips.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Eero, and Eero makes a Wi-Fi mesh system. I'm using one in my place right now, and if you're not familiar with Wi-Fi mesh, well, you're about to be. So the idea is you have, instead of a single base station that's handling Wi-Fi for your home or your office, you have multiple base stations that handle that for you. But instead of doing the old school thing where you'd set up like an Airport Extreme and then you'd get an Airport Express and you'd have to go and do this kind of bridge thing from the one to the other, and it was just kind of this convoluted and not exactly efficient way to manage data going through your network, well, that's what Eero fixes. So Wi-Fi mesh lets all of these base stations interact seamlessly and intelligently so that your Wi-Fi network is as large as it can be and that data can flow as efficiently as possible through that network, and your devices never have to worry about whether or not they're connected to the best base station for where they are, because Eero handles all that for you. It's awesome. I've been using one in my place for a while now. The second generation version is out, so I upgraded, and that's what I'm using now. And what I found is that since they've added in a third 5 gigahertz radio into the system, so now it's true tri-band, my network, which I already thought was crazy efficient with the first generation Eero, became even more so with the second generation model. And anything that makes my network appear faster, to be more efficient, and it's those are good things for me. So the new version, second generation, you have your primary base station, which looks like the one from the first generation. So it's the big square thing. When I say big, it's not really that big. It's like the size of a sandwich. And now it includes the Eero beacon, and those are I'll call them the satellite access points for your mesh network. And these are smaller. They plug directly into an outlet on the wall. So now they take up less space. You don't have a cord running from the bigger thing off to an outlet. And they even have like a night light with an ambient light sensor built in. So if you need a nightlight in a room where an Eero is plugged in, it can now do that for you too, which I thought was just a really nice touch. But the thing is, this new system is fast, it's efficient, it's easy to set up, it's not a difficult process to move from the first generation to the second generation. If you want to do that, you don't have to blast your network away. It's just a matter of getting new stuff in, old stuff out. It's great. And I have been so very happy with mine. So what you need to do is go get yours so that you can have a network that runs as efficiently as mine does. And to do that, head over to the Eero website, and that's Eero.com. And then when you get to the checkout point in the purchase process, enter the promo code TDO, and you get free overnight shipping, which is pretty awesome. So Eero.com, Eero.com, use that discount code TDO for free overnight shipping so that you can get your better network up and running even faster. And thank you, Eero, for being our sponsor. Okay, before we wrap up today, yesterday's show I recorded when Brian and Dave and I, John Braun and Jeff Butts, we were all at MacStock over the weekend, which was a conference for Apple fans. And so I interviewed Chuck Joyner. That was yesterday's show. We are back in the studio today. And Brian, you had some thoughts about MacStock, didn't you?
MacStock, yeah. I had fun this year. It was a good time. It's a user conference, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. It's a user conference.
The 2-day user conference takes place in Crystal Lake. It's not actually in Woodstock, but it's near Woodstock, Illinois.
It's like next to Woodstock, Illinois, which is where Groundhog Day was filmed.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Well, now you do.
Now I do. Interesting. Anyway, yeah, lovely part of the country. It's about an hour outside of Chicago. We had a great time. The conference sessions were just top notch this year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, top notch. We're really, really good presentations, really, really good information. I learned lots of stuff. That's saying something. Dave's mesh networking presentation, I think, answered a lot of questions for people.
Fantastic.
You had everyone just, like you were like dangling a hook over the crowd with information about home automation. And then they were just like, give me.
People were very excited. To have an interest in that. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of interest. I gave,
you gave a fantastic talk about the state of Apple and where, and what you see as options for Apple moving forward, and your insight into where Apple may be headed was really great. And
thanks, Ben. I appreciate
that. And I loved the line where you said Steve Jobs was no Tim Cook.
Oh, I did say that, didn't I?
You did. That was really great.
Yeah, I imagine that I'm gonna end up writing about that, which should be fun. So this kind of conference, you know, it's not a trade show, right? This isn't a macro.
No, it is placement. Not a trade show at all.
It's a user conference, and it's it's a place where Apple users, Apple device owners and app product users can come together and learn more about the products. And you know, now that Macworld is gone, rest mm-hmm. in peace, it fills a niche. There are definitely a lot of us want to be able to get together and partake in learning more about our devices.
Yeah, it was a really great educational, community, and social event.
Yeah, I think, John, I know that you couldn't go, but I think it's the kind of event you would enjoy, and I think it was the kind of event that you would give a bang-up presentation for.
I've always enjoyed going to events like that in the past, Macworlds in New York and San Francisco when they existed. It's a great way to calibrate yourself, to sort of meet people who think like you do or maybe don't think like you do and sort of, you know, get together, talk, calibrate, get up to date, see what other people are really thinking and feeling in a personal way. It's a great experience.
Yeah, it really is. Now, Dave Hamilton, John Brown, and Guy Searles ended up talking about the business model for MacStock on the Mac Geek Gab that was put out on Sunday. They recorded it right there during the show.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. They were just like out in the common area, and so you could walk by and see them recording the show. It was a lot of fun. I'm going to have a link to that in today's show notes if anyone wants to get their take on the conference as well. And I have to add, there's just the coolest thing that happened, and I'm not using names because I'm going to be talking about someone that's a minor and I didn't get permission to use names, but there was this kid, and if you're listening, you know who you are. And it was so awesome to see this boy who was so excited to come to the conference, and his dad was like, to quote Brian, giddy up. Mm-hmm. And they came to the 2-day event together and had a wonderful time. And seeing him sitting there scribbling notes as fast as he could in my home automation sessions mm-hmm. was just so awesome. And he was telling me some of the things that he plans to do to his parents' house. And his parents are fantastic because they are totally game for this. And it was just so much fun. And Brian, with the way things were happening, I don't know if you realized, do you remember seeing that G5 computer that was just kind of sitting around?
Yeah.
Some people went and got, I think it was actually people from OWC, went and got everything they could to soup that up.
Oh, nice.
And so that this kid could just take it and have totally maxed out G5 to experiment with.
To play with, yeah. And I know that, speaking of kids with computers, our own Jeff Butts got one too.
Oh, he got a computer?
Yeah, the I believe that it's not only stuff to soup up that G5 that was brought in, it was a second G5 that was brought in for him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, see that's just so cool.
Yeah, it is. It is super cool. Plus, you know, Jeff Butts is always getting into mischief.
Yeah.
When it comes to tinkering with a Mac. So yeah, I look forward to seeing what he's going to do with that. Of course, he showed up with a G4 PowerBook.
Right. That was running Linux.
And it was running Linux. Yeah.
And it was pretty slick. I posted a picture of that on my Instagram and Twitter accounts.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I love events like this. It's, I would like to see, even more people there. If you're interested in that element of, such a thing, you should definitely check out the Geek Gab conversation, on that topic. I learned so much. I had a good time. There's just, great people show up for things like that.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to hang out with them.
It was so much fun. I just had a great time. Anyhow, Brian, I'm so glad I got to see you there and Dave and Jeff Butts and John mm-hmm. Braun mm-hmm. and all of our other friends that were there. It was just it was like a family reunion in a good way.
Yeah, and it's the kind of atmosphere where it makes conversations with people that maybe you've been listening to on podcasts for years. Or you can actually have a conversation with them. Yeah, because I don't mean just us. There's lots of podcasters that are there.
Yeah, there were a lot of podcasters that were there. And it was fun when people would just walk up to me and pick up a conversation that they'd been having with me by listening to the two shows.
Yeah.
And they'd start talking about something that maybe was from a show last week or last month or whenever, and we'd have a great conversation. Absolutely loved that.
I kept getting I thought you'd be taller. Did you? Was that just me? Did you get that too?
No, I think it's just you. Yeah. Hey, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man. It was a fun discussion. Oh,
absolutely. And John, thank you for being here as well.
My pleasure. Yes, it was a fun discussion. See you next time.
Yes, and thank you, Eero, for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, Eero.com, Eero.com. Use the discount code TDO at checkout and get overnight shipping for free on your Eero Wi-Fi Mesh system. So that's really awesome. Listeners, thank you for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.